From APM in New York, I'm Ben Johnson, and this is Marketplace Tech. Apple's CEO Tim Cook is due in India this week. The country has for a long time been considered a key emerging market where access to smartphones is changing everything from prosecution of sexual assault crimes to daily mobile payments for small businesses. What's Tim Cook's business there? From the Marketplace desk at OPB, Mitchell Hartman reports.
Why India? Simple supply and demand. Let's start with demand. Apple's sales in India are minimal, but Chad Bown at the Peterson Institute says that's about to change.
India is as big a market as China. The difference is India is still currently a lot poorer. It's a huge future growth market. As its citizens become richer, more of them move into the middle class.
Apple's been pushing cheaper iPhones for developing markets. The company wants India to loosen commercial restrictions and let it increase sales. What about supply? Analyst Angelo Zeno at S&P says Apple gets tremendous efficiencies from its China-based manufacturing chain.
They've developed a manufacturing base second to none. Could they eventually gain production efficiencies out in India? It's a bit far-fetched.
Zeno says with its brownouts, bad roads, and bureaucracy, India is simply not ready for Apple. But if Prime Minister Modi succeeds in modernizing the economy, India could get a piece of the action. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Hey, thanks for listening to Marketplace Tech. We give you the context you need to understand the business of technology and how it matters to you. Some context on us. We are a nonprofit service and rely on donations from our listeners to keep going. Your gift in any amount will be automatically doubled this month thanks to the generosity of Newman's Own Foundation. And we've just made special Let's Do the Numbers Pilsner glasses available to thank you for your support. Donate today at marketplace.org. Ride-sharing is a sector of tech where competition is growing at home and abroad. Just this week, Waze, the mapping app owned by Google, started a small carpooling pilot program for people in California's Bay Area. The two big players at home have always been Uber and Lyft, but whether it's fighting for private capital to spur growth, engaging in a spirited discussion about support for drivers, or sparring with municipalities over background checks and other regulations, there's a lot on Lyft's plate right now. The company has also recently partnered with an investor, GM, to push forward self-driving cars. So that's how I started my conversation with John Zimmer, co-founder and president of Lyft.
The likely way that autonomous vehicles roll out, first are, we believe, on a network versus private ownership, meaning it would be more similar to transit, a fixed route. And as you start doing this, more and more people could potentially move over from car ownership. So we imagine this rollout lasts several years at the point when it begins.
I want to talk about the definition of employment for drivers. How is Lyft thinking about that?
The drivers on our platform range, you know, from doing this a few hours a week to several hours a week. For those that drive over, you know, call it approximately 40 hours a week, it's based on rides, not hours, those drivers are able to retain all their commissions. So 20% that they would pay to Lyft is actually returned to them. So we still believe in incentivizing and taking care of those drivers that are driving longer on the platform.
Drivers that are working long hours, how do you protect them from driving too much, from becoming sleep deprived?
We've had this feature that if a driver drives, it depends on the market, could range from 10 to 14 hours. We will require a 6-hour break from when they can sign back on.
You guys stepped away from Austin because the city wanted more stringent background checks for drivers. Do you think that's the right move?
What happened in Austin was specifically around fingerprint checks, and you said more stringent.
Yeah.
I would argue that they're not actually more stringent. And so what you end up with is an incomplete data set at the federal level, and oftentimes a bias towards arrest records, which did not lead to a conviction.
Can you talk about a way that your company is using data that you didn't anticipate you would be able to?
Yeah, I think what we're doing with ETAs is very interesting. So ETAs, estimated time of arrival, is a key metric for our business. It's something that's very important to both our drivers and passengers. You want to minimize that number to maximize what a driver can earn. And as part of that, you have to know what direction is the car traveling. Is it on that bridge or is it under that bridge?
Can you tell me what you think Lyft will be as a company in 10 years, 20 years?
Yeah, so what our hope and belief is that Lyft can be that next form of transportation instead of owning a car.
You're partnered with GM. How is GM thinking about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the end of car ownership doesn't mean the end of cars, but it does mean a massive shift and change for the car industry. By sharing that belief, I think both of us can address the opportunity in a bigger way.
John Zimmer, co-founder and president of Lyft. John, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Tiny robots designed to go inside our bodies and fix stuff is one of those ideas we have been talking about for decades. But this week, Daniela Roos, professor of electrical engineering and computer science at MIT, presented a project at a robotics conference in Sweden that is pretty close to the dream.
This robot is ingestible in the form of a capsule. And once the robot reaches the stomach, the robot unfolds and can do interesting tasks.
Think about this as a kind of origami made out of the pig intestines we use for sausage, frozen in a piece of ice that melts in your stomach. It's controlled by a tiny magnet, and the mission it is currently designed for is getting little button batteries out of a child. Apparently, kids swallow 3,500 batteries a year in the U.S., and they're dangerous.
Once the battery gets in the stomach, it can easily get jammed in the coating of the stomach. So you really need something to pull the battery out and then direct it outside of the body.
Roos hopes her mini robots could someday replace certain kinds of surgery. For now, her team is focused on testing the robot on pigs, which have similar stomachs to ours, then human tests later on. So, hey, kid, take that battery out of your mouth. Don't you dare swallow it. At least not for a couple years. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.